I learned a lot and saw a lot when I was working the overnight shift at the Taco Bell in my town. We had one of the Taco Bell locations that would close the interior of the restaurant at around 1 a.m., but the drive-thru would be open all night long. It was a pretty simple job, especially since for the most part, after 2 in the morning, you only had to deal with a few customers. And for the most part, the customers were pretty cool. But there was one interaction that I know I'll never forget. That night, there was only myself and one other person working. He was doing a lot of the cooking while I cleaned the restaurant for the morning shift and took in orders on the drive-thru headset. It was probably about 2 in the morning when this customer first came through. He had a fairly simple order, so we got him all set up and he came through the window without any problems. We talked a bit while I waited for his food to be ready, and I remember him asking me how many people we had in there right now. And I didn't think anything of it, so I let him know it was just me and my manager. But by that point, his food was ready and he drove away. No big deal, right? Wrong. 20 minutes after he pulled off, someone else sent off our drive-thru notice and I began talking to them through the headset asking how I could help them today. And right away, I recognized the guy's voice. I was curious as to why he would come back so soon, especially since this time when he placed the order, it was only for another drink. I told him to pull up to the window and I thought everything was going to be fine. But as soon as his car pulled up, I noticed he wasn't alone. He had 2 other people with him, and when they got to the window, the passenger and the person in the back seat began to get out of their car. I got a bad feeling about the situation right away, so I proceeded to close and lock the drive-thru window, which is when they began flashing their pistols at the window. And I know the glass isn't bulletproof, so I was going to open the window. It's not worth getting shot over. But as I reached to unlock the window, one of the guys must have thought I was reaching for something and he pulled the trigger 4 times. I didn't even feel it, but I knew I had been hit when I heard the 3 men outside the window panicking before I heard their car tear out of the drive-thru lane. I looked down and saw blood beginning to leak through my shirt. I fell to the ground clutching my torso. Everything around me began going black, and the next thing I knew, I was in the hospital. And almost 3 whole days had passed. The police didn't have any luck finding the guys who shot me, and my coworker claimed that they didn't even try to take anything after shooting me. According to the police, the shooter most likely didn't mean to fire his weapon, and when they did, all of the perpetrators panicked and fled the scene as fast as they had arrived. It was the second security job that I had ever had, and at first, I was loving it. The job was to work the night shift in an apartment building that was currently in the process of being renovated by new owners. The reason they hired security was to make sure that no one was squatting in any of the empty, run-down apartments. And if I'm being honest, it was really a simple job. My shift typically started around 9 p.m., and I would work with one other security guard. We would take turns walking each of the floors and making sure that all the doors were secure. But other than that, we practically got paid to spend most of our night just hanging out in the lobby and watching the few cameras that were laid out around the building, most of which were focused on the doors leading in and out. For the most part, it was really simple and relaxing, but there was a few incidents that put both me and my coworker Sam on edge. It all started when Sam came back from her walkthrough of floor 5 one night, and she told me that she could have sworn she heard someone walking around the halls, but when she checked, she saw nothing. After that, almost every walkthrough we did, one of us could swear that we heard things, whether it be walking, creaking, or sometimes even the sound of something banging against the wall of a room. Anytime we checked it out, there was no one to be found. We started to joke with one another about the building being haunted, but that was just to lighten the mood after anything creepy happened. It wasn't until about 2 weeks after we started hearing noises that I had confirmation that someone was in the building with us. And it was just my luck that it happened on the one day that month that Sam had taken off of work. I began doing my first walk through the building that day, and as soon as I got into the stairwell, something in the back of my head told me that I wasn't alone. But I figured I was just jittery after all the noises that were happening, and since I had been alone, I was just a little bit more on edge. I made my way through the first, second, and third floors without any incident. However, as soon as I began making my way through the dimly lit hallway of the fourth floor, I began to hear footsteps. I kept looking over my shoulder as it sounded as if the steps were coming from behind me, but every time, there was nothing there. I made sure to check every room on the floor thoroughly, and to my surprise, there was still nothing to be found. I tried my best to put the noises in the back of my mind and continued on with my walkthrough. I made it back down to the lobby and began relaxing when I practically fell right out of my chair. I had been looking at the screen on my desk, and I thought I had seen movement out of the corner of my eye near the stairwell. And sure enough, as soon as I looked up, I could see what was clearly an adult male staring at me through the doorway of the staircase. I jumped backward in my seat, knocking myself over, and practically fell right onto the ground. I scrambled to get back to my feet, but by the time I looked back at the stairwell, that man was gone. I took off after him, and I could have sworn that I heard him running up the stairs and then through the door onto the fourth floor. But by the time I had gotten there, the man was nowhere to be found. I called the police, and they did a thorough search of the building but came up empty-handed. Honestly, for a minute I felt like I must have been seeing things, but I know for a fact that there was someone else in the apartment building with me that day. And for the next week or so, Sam and I made sure to run our walkthroughs together so that we always had backup. But to our surprise, there weren't any signs of the man that I had seen, and the strange noises had also seemed to stop, at least for a little while. It was only around 9 days after the first sighting that Sam and I ended up having another incident. The two of us just started our shift, and we were getting ready to do our first walkthrough, when all of a sudden, we heard what sounded like someone yelling coming from upstairs. Now, it didn't sound like screams coming from someone in pain, but instead sounded like someone yelling very aggressively. The two of us looked at each other, and then we grabbed our radio and cell phones before going to check it out. Sure enough, the yelling that we heard was coming from the fourth floor, the same floor that I had followed the man onto the first time that I had seen him. Sam and I made sure to be careful as we stepped into the hallway since it was very poorly lit, and we didn't know what to expect. And sure enough, as soon as we walked out of the staircase, the yelling ceased. Sam and I both listened closely in hopes to finding out where the yelling had been coming from, and both of us nearly turned around and ran back down the stairs when the man began yelling at us directly. "You won't take me home," he began to yell. "Neither of you." Sam and I looked at each other before I responded, "Sir, we aren't here to hurt you. Please come out so we can talk." We waited for a moment, but there was no response. There was no verbal response. But Sam tapped me on the shoulder before pointing to one of the rooms on the left of the hallway. We could clearly see the door beginning to crack open before something flew out of it toward us. I heard the sound of something small hitting the wall next to me, and when I looked on the floor, I saw what looked like a small dart of sorts. Sam and I didn't say anything to each other before we both took off running down the staircase. It wasn't long before Sam was on the phone with the police station again, and they had units heading our way. This time, when they got there, I decided to wait in the stairway for them to make sure that the man hadn't had a chance to escape. And Sam was watching the cameras and all of the exits. As far as we knew, the man was still on the fourth floor. The police arrived and they made their way up to the floor and headed straight for the room that we had seen the dart fly out of. This time, the man made no attempt to hide or escape. As soon as the police knocked on the door of the room, he opened it and turned himself in. The police officer that Sam and I spoke to seemed very concerned for our safety and asked us if either of us had ever met this man before. We both said no, and when we asked why, the officer informed us that the man was likely going to lure us both into the room he had been hiding in to kill us. They found multiple knives in the room with him alongside multiple large garbage bags and three plastic tarps. That wasn't all though. On this person, the officer said they found a tranquilizer gun along with three darts that had been laced with a strong sedative. To this day, We still don't know why we would have been targeted. In the summer of 2002, I found myself working at one of the gas stations in our town. And more often than not, the owner would put me on the night shift, which I was not fond of, but I needed the job, so there wasn't much to argue about at the time. I did put my foot down after an incident occurred that caused us to call the cops and got us slightly involved in a murder investigation. And after that, I was never put on the night shift again. The problem came at around 11 at night when I was the only person working in the store and I saw a man walking down the sidewalk. It looked like he was going to come in and buy something, but to my surprise, he seemed to stop in the parking lot. I watched the man from the window of the gas station as he appeared to be looking around for something. It's hard to describe it, but his movements looked like he was some sort of walking zombie. He was half hunched over, and with every step he took, it almost looked like his arms were twitching. I thought about checking on him and asking if he needed help, but right before I could bring myself to do something, I noticed something that shook me up a bit. What I originally thought was simply a red pattern on his shirt was now glistening under the streetlights as if it was something that was wet. And the more I looked at it, the more I noticed that his hands and fingers were also covered in this red substance. Right away, I knew something was wrong. And considering that I was alone in the gas station, I decided my best option would be to lock the door. I walked around to the corner and went over to the door to lock it. And just at that moment, the man in the parking lot happened to look over at me. I continued locking the door and bolting the floor lock as the man began to approach the glass. As he got closer, it was clear that he had been covered in blood, some of which was even on his face, but none of it appeared to be coming from him. I reached for my cell phone and began calling the police as the man began to press his face against the glass door. He began slapping his hands against the glass as he yelled in some sort of incoherent language. The police assured me that they were on their way to my location and I made sure to stand far away from the glass. About 30 seconds before the police arrived, the blood-covered man reached into his pant pocket and pulled out a small pocket knife. My eyes widened as he began to fold open the blade and then press the tip of it against the glass. The man began to let out a sinister laugh, and it looked like he was getting ready to wind up his arm and smash the glass door once and for all. Lucky for me, the police ended up pulling into the parking lot before he could do so. The man turned and faced the two cars that pulled up, and they were immediately at a standoff. Thankfully, the police managed to tase the man before he could hurt anyone and arrest him. But get this, things got even more serious the next day when the police came in to question me about what happened. It turns out before coming to the gas station, the man had taken some sort of drug that made him very belligerent. He then proceeded to murder his girlfriend and her older brother in the apartment before walking down the road. He told the police that he had been possessed by demons and that his god told him that he would find more at the gas station. I don't know what was going through his head. All I know is I've never been so terrified in my entire life.
Almost 20 years ago now, I used to work the overnight shift at an animal shelter. I know that's a long time ago, but something happened one night that is burned into my memory. I can recall the whole thing like it was yesterday. The textures, the smells. It's something I've carried with me for nearly two decades. My shifts were from 11 at night until 7 in the morning, a solid 8 hours of sleeplessness that grounded me down over the course of my time there. Night shifts can be good if you need the money, even better if you're antisocial, but the lifestyle grinds you down. Put it this way, I had a full vitamin D deficiency after just 6 months of working there. It's not a healthy way to live. The animal shelter itself was actually a pretty big place. A horseshoe-shaped building complete with a waiting area, a series of offices, medical examination room, and, of course, hundreds and hundreds of kennels and cages. Aside from once a week when the overnight cleaning staff were there, I spent all of my shifts alone behind the shelter's reception desk that gave me a direct line of sight through the security glass of the shelter's front doors. My only duties were to monitor the emergency phone line, check on the animals now and then, and do some basic filing. I'd pack a few snacks and sandwiches for when I got hungry mid-shift, and every so often I'd call up the 24-hour pizza joint just a few miles away and get them to deliver a box of hot cheesy joy to push me through the night. Sure, the hours sucked, but working at the animal shelter gave me a great deal of freedom, and it paid really well. I mean, way better than any other night porter jobs I'd seen advertised. It was quite a happy time in my life, which I suppose is why I remember this story so well. It was such an odd event in an otherwise joyful time in my life. Anyway, on the rare occasion that someone came in, it was to drop off a stray animal that they had found or one they no longer could care for. The shelter was always happy to take them in and make them as comfortable as possible. It was kind of nice being the first point of contact to a lot of these animals. A lot of them were nervous or scared, and calming them down with treats and petting was more fulfilling than words can describe. I made a lot of furry friends during my employment at the shelter. I should add that the only exception to the shelter's rescue policy applied to fighting dogs or feral cats. As heartbreaking as it is, dogs that have been trained and conditioned to fight other animals are more often than not hopeless cases. Even if they're sweet and well-behaved around humans, if other animals or even small children aren't safe around them, they've no hope of adoption. Most tend to be euthanized, which is something so sad I can't even bring myself to write about it. But even as hard as these cases are, what happened this one particular night was so much worse. It was just past 3 a.m. when I finished a cigarette outside and was returning to my desk. It was one of those quiet fall nights where the silence seems to hang heavy in the air, so I heard the sound of footsteps coming from quite a ways away. There was a woman sprinting full pelt down the sidewalk towards the front entrance of the shelter, banging on the glass and buzzing the intercom over and over as she reached the doors. As I moved to greet her, I noticed that her cheeks glistened with fresh tears. Something terrible was obviously happening. I hurried to unlock the glass door, trying to remain calm as I asked her how I could help. She didn't answer the question at first, which is really unusual. Normally, that's the first thing out of a person's mouth. They've got 1,000 questions about adoption, what shots an animal might need, etc. All she asked was if she could come inside. She didn't have an animal with her, so I was beginning to get a little suspicious as to why she was there. But nevertheless, I'm not one to turn away an upset person, so I invited her inside, gave her some tissues to dry her cheeks, and proceeded to try to get more info out of her. When she calms down, she begins to tell me that she needs to get her cat back. This was a problem, since I wasn't authorized to return any interred animals without the proper signatures and paperwork, all of which was in the locked office of one of the resident veterinarians. There was absolutely no way I'd be able to return her animal, especially not in the middle of the night. She'd have to return during regular hours to talk to one of the vets. It's when I tried to explain this to her that things started to go downhill. To my absolute horror, she goes on to explain that she actually came in earlier that day to have her cat put down. She had returned to claim the body in order to give her precious kitty a proper burial. Seriously, those were her exact words. She's still in tears at this point, and she's getting gradually more upset again the more she's talking about her dead cat. I just wanted to get her out of here. She didn't seem it at first, but the more I was around her, the more I gathered that she wasn't exactly all there, if that makes sense. So, like a fool, I took a brief description and went looking for her dead cat. The shelter keeps the bodies of euthanized animals in large blue plastic drums. You know the type. The kind that chemicals are kept in the black plastic lids. These blue drums are in turn kept in a huge walk-in freezer located in the shelter's basement. I gained access to the room in question, opened the freezer, and began to look for whichever barrel had been sealed the previous day. Finding it was the easiest part of the whole process. As I pulled off the black plastic lid, the smell hit me. Even when they're frozen, the animals still gave off this faint, sickly smell of decay, throw a load of them into the same plastic drum, and, well, the stink gets intense. I had to sift through scores of twisted, frozen corpses, laying them down on the cold metal floor of the walk-in and studying them in order to find the one that matched the woman's scant description. Eventually, I did find the cat that seemed to match the description I was given. But there was one thing. The cat was frozen solid and was actually stuck to another dead cat. I tried pulling them apart with my bare hands, but it was no good. I'd need something else for leverage, so I put the frozen mess of bodies on the freezer floor, put one foot on one of the cats, then proceeded to peel them from one another with a horrific snapping sound. I nearly puked when I'd seen what I'd done. A huge portion of the cat's frozen flesh had been torn away and was still stuck to its frozen partner. Keeping hold of one that was the crying woman's, I threw the other back into the plastic drum, found an opaque plastic bag, and returned it to its former owner. She seemed happy enough and actually tried to hug me as she was leaving, but I really didn't feel like it was worth it. The whole thing left a very bad taste in my mouth. I had no idea what she was going to do with that dead cat, even if she did reassure me that she was just going to bury it. Sometimes, even to this day, I wonder, whatever happened to that woman? It was pretty quiet at the gas station, and it was around 9:45. There were no customers in the store, and my coworker and I were doing the usual cleaning chores. I was busy cleaning the large glass doors when my coworker said something to me. I turned to respond, and when I turned back to cleaning the glass door, I nearly wet myself, as I see a tall man in a sweater, wearing a beanie, and the object that scared me the most, a black face mask. My mind begins racing as I reach for my keychain to lock the door, but the man was moving too fast and was inside before I could unclip the keys from my pants. The man looked at me, and in my mind I thought he was sizing me up. I ready myself for whatever this guy plans to do. My heart was racing a mile a second, and I almost thought that this was going to be it, that we were about to be robbed. That's when the man pulls his mask down and reveals his face. He asks if we had restrooms, and I gesture him towards the restrooms. As he walks away, he pulls his mask up again as he passes my coworker, who is quickly but quietly coming up to me. We both were shocked at what was going on, but both of us had hoped that this guy meant no harm. 5 minutes later, the guy comes back from the restroom, and he quickly leaves the store. After a little while, my heart stopped racing and things calmed down. That's when I made a realization. I had seen a man who looked a lot like the masked man walking around the station and peering through the windows at the inside of the station. I don't know if they were the same person or not, but after thinking about it for a bit, I realized the guy may have been thinking about causing trouble, but when he saw my 6'8", 200-pound co-worker walking towards him, he decided against it. I have to go back to close the station tonight. I will be carrying extra protective measures on my person, but I am hoping he doesn't return. Or if he does, he doesn't have that mask. Every gas station employee has that fear of a holdup, and last year a station in the same chain I work for in the same city was robbed, so the fear is especially real for me. In 2015, I managed to land my dream job as manager of this really old rustic pub. It was the kind with stained glass windows, ornate bar fixtures, the works. But it was bought up by this big brewery company not long after, and they ended up cleaning house. So within 6 months of getting my dream job, I'd lost it again. I was desperate. I had rent and bills to pay, so I was ready to work just about anywhere, doing just about anything, for any money at all, really. So I ended up getting a job in this 24-hour off license in the middle of town, and it was my job to work the night shift, 8 p.m. until 6 a.m. This place was really busy, too. Had a cash machine inside, sold really expensive bottles of premium booze, and was mostly a cash business. It was the place that pretty much every single person who went out to drink and wanted to carry on drinking when the bars closed would stop off to pick up a few bottles before they got a taxi home. So I'm not messing around when I say We sometimes had like 7,000 pounds in cash on site by the end of the busiest part of the night shift. And well, I say we, I mean me, as I work that shift entirely alone. So it's Sunday morning, about 5 a.m., and it's just before Christmas. The off-license had been extremely busy that night, and we had way, way more than 7,000 pounds on site. Like, it had been Black Friday, which in the UK means that it was the last Friday before Christmas, so all the office parties had been in town, spending it up, and they pretty much all wanted booze to go home with, too. There were queues going out the door at one point. Seriously, it was one of the busiest shifts I've ever worked, including in pubs. So by the time it started to quiet down, I was ready to collapse. I remember just sort of resting my head on the counter at one point, thinking I could have actually fallen asleep right then and there. Then I hear the little beep at the door opening. And although I'd rather have flushed my own head down the toilet than serve another drunk customer at that point, I get ready to serve one more person. I look up and in front of me is this bloke who seems alarmingly sober. Like almost everyone who walked in during those Saturday night shifts were rotten drunk, eyes all glazed over and bloodshot, slurring their words, but this guy is shockingly lucid, which was dead weird. He also keeps his hands in his jacket pockets the whole time he's talking. But it gets even weirder when he greets me by name. I thought he might have known me, and I just didn't recognize him, so I remain polite and say like, "Yeah, that's me. How do you know that?" Then he once again refers to me by name and follows up by telling me where I live. Again, I'm like, "How do you know that?" Only this time I'm also thinking that this is a plainclothes policeman or something, and I've done something wrong, like accidentally sold a bottle of booze to someone under 18, maybe even failed one of those underage tests the police try on occasion to catch businesses. Then he starts asking after my mom, then refers to her by name, and asks about my sister, again knowing her name too. He asks me if they're still living at such and such address, and gives their exact street address. I then apologize and tell them that I just didn't recognize him, figuring that he was an old family friend or something that I'd forgotten all about. But something about him is creeping me out all the same. He didn't once take his hands out of his jacket pockets, like to the point it was getting sort of odd. People talk with their hands all the time, and this guy's hands were like wedged into those front pockets on his jacket. That's when these other guys walk in, who also seem weirdly sober. They were quiet and deliberate in their movements, just pacing towards the counter and flanking the guy who seemed to know a little too much about me. Then really politely, the guy who seemed to know all about where I lived and where my family live, asked me if there's a toilet in the back of the shop. I told him there was, and he tells me to walk back into it, lock the door, and not come out for at least half an hour. And just to make it clear that he's not really asking me, he shows me that he's holding something inside his jacket, something heavy. Only then do I realize what's happening. They proceed to take all the CCTV USB sticks, wreck the monitors, break into the safe, rinse the tills, empty the shelves of all the premium spirits. I mean, they absolutely robbed the place blind. All the while, I was just sat in the toilet, wondering how that guy knew where I lived or where my family lived. As they were leaving, I heard footsteps walking up to the toilet door, and I started shaking hard. Then I hear this voice telling me that I did the right thing, for the sake of my family, that all the stuff that they'd taken was insured, that no one but the insurance companies would lose a penny, and it was them who were the real thieves anyway. I ended up telling the police that I didn't get a good look at the guy's face, and that I wanted to help them, but that I just couldn't. I told them that it all happened really fast and that they must have been professionals because I didn't even get a chance to hit the alarm behind the counter. They must have gotten away with like 10 grand all in all, and they didn't even take half an hour to do it, more like 15 or 20 minutes to be honest. And they'd managed to make sure that the one person capable of identifying them wouldn't say a thing to anyone about it. Like, I can't even tell you how frightening it was that they managed to work out where my mom and sister lived. People who put that kind of work into criminality, they really are not to be messed with. And besides, it's just stuff. Just material stuff. It's not worth losing your life over, and it's certainly not worth risking your family's safety over. No amount of money compares to your own mom's safety.